From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA. You've heard of the Greatest Generation, the Baby Boomers, and of course, Generation X. But have you heard of Generation Illegal?
These kids are going through those same milestones that every U.S. teenager goes through. Yet, their access to the society is limited because of their residency status.
And Latino issues were front and center in the recent Texas primary and the battle for Latino voters. But 40 years ago, a group of high school students in East Los Angeles had to take to the streets to demand equal rights. Y Un Fuego en la Juventud, A Fire in the Youth, and the music of the B-side players. Coming up on Latino USA, stay tuned. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Tensions on the Colombian-Ecuadorian border have escalated, and Venezuela is blaming the United States. Joining us to discuss this very tense situation is Univision's national news anchor, Maria Elena Salinas. Hi, Maria Elena.
Hi, Maria. Nice to talk to you.
Well, a lot of attention is being focused on the elections and the Latino vote, but south of here, there is a very tense situation in Venezuela, starting with Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who has placed 10 battalions of his army along the Colombian border. This after soldiers from Colombia entered Ecuador in pursuit of rebels there. It's all a little bit confusing, but Chavez is basically saying that a confrontation with the United States is inevitable. Can you kind of help us figure this one out, Maria Elena?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it? But, you know, anything is expected when Hugo Chavez is involved. And you got to wonder, if this is a conflict between Ecuador and Colombia, where does the threat of war from Venezuela come into place? Well, for one thing, there's two reasons why he's gotten involved. One is that, you know, Venezuela's ally to Ecuador, a country that shares his vision to put into practice the socialism of the 21st century. And then also, Hugo Chavez is upset at the fact that during the raid of the rebel camp, they found information in a laptop that links Chavez to the FARC directly. And among other things, the Colombian government says that they found evidence that Chavez had given up to $300 million to the FARC. Of course, he says it's not true, but if that were true, there would be a very hypocritical position of Chavez when it comes to helping broker the release of some of the hostages while he was involved in financially supporting this terrorist organization that has created so much havoc in the country and that, you know, kept some of these hostages as slaves and did so much harm to these people.
Maria Elena, that is a huge charge of Hugo Chavez being involved directly with a rebel group like the FARC in Colombia. But I still don't understand, what role does the United States have to do with this? I mean, no one's really even talking about this issue in the United States. How does the U.S. suddenly get linked to this entire situation in South America?
Because Hugo Chavez is calling Colombia a lackey of the United States. It links every enemy that he has to the United States. So that should not be surprising. He's basically saying that the United States is supporting Colombia, and Colombia is now, you know, public enemy number one for Venezuelans, and now for Ecuador also. So that's the link. And, you know, it's interesting because in the meeting of the OAS, I think it was only the United States who supported Colombia and who did not criticize Colombia. So, you know, you can't ignore him. You don't know just up to what point you should take Hugo Chavez seriously. He cannot be ignored because he has money and because he has power and because he has the army. And as of now, what we know up to now, the armed forces are supporting Hugo Chavez.
All right, Maria Elena, let's switch gears for a second here as we end up talking about the elections and the primaries here. A lot of people had thought that Barack Obama was closing in on this Latino voter gap between him and Hillary Clinton. But in the end, interesting statistics here. Hillary Clinton won 67% of the Latino vote in Texas, about the same as she had won in California. Barack Obama went after these Latino voters. What do you think happened here?
I think that the results ended up being very similar to what the polls were towards the end. And there was some indication that young people were going to go for Obama. Let's remember that, you know, one thing is the primaries and the other thing is the caucuses. Obama seems to be doing really well in the caucuses. The counting was going very, very slow. There is this belief that at the end, when all the votes are counted, Obama might have won more delegates, even though Hillary is winning the popular vote. You know, there's so much information out there now with all these exit polls, and they're so detailed that when you start analyzing that information, you see that it did not really materialize, that those predictions that young people were going to vote or young Latinos were going to vote for Barack Obama did not materialize in the way that people expected. CNN has some detailed information about the Latino vote, and it shows that the young people between 18 and 29, 51 of them voted for Clinton and 48 for Obama. They did not vote for Obama massively. So, you know, what is happening, I think, is at the last minute, I think that they are being influenced. So it's very difficult now, Maria, to read polls before an election because it seems like people are changing their minds at the last minute. And we've seen that in several instances now.
Well, an invigorated democracy is difficult for a lot of reporters to handle, but I think it happens to be great. Thanks for joining us, Maria Elena.
Thank you, Maria.
Maria Elena Salinas is a syndicated columnist and national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. When I was a teenager growing up in Chicago, I knew I was going to end up in college. My dad was a doctor, my mom a social worker. But in Pilsen, in the Mexican barrio in Chicago, many of the people in my own generation, Latino youth, were being pushed into industrial arts and home economics classes, not college prep courses. These days, even my preteen children talk about college as a certainty, and I love that. But in 1968, Latino high school students in East Los Angeles had to take to the streets in order to protest against their second-class education. Hundreds of students staged a five-school walkout. It was a historic event. From Los Angeles, Latino USA's Monica Lopez spoke to many of the original participants of that historic walkout on its 40th anniversary. Here's her report.
The Los Angeles Unified School District is the second largest school system in the United States, and for the 500,000 Latino students currently enrolled, the actions of their predecessors 40 years ago guaranteed their right to a quality education. In 1968, Latino students began organizing to protest inequalities between their East Side and the predominantly white West Side schools. After their requests for improvements went unanswered, the students launched a walkout from five high schools.
One, no student or teacher will be reprimanded or suspended for participating in any efforts which are executed for the purpose of improving or furthering the educational quality in our schools.
At an award ceremony this week, current L.A. high school students reenacted the historic school board meeting where walkout leaders presented their demands to board members. Dozens of the original walkout organizers looked on from the audience and were later honored by the current L.A. school board with an award for instigating lasting change in the system. Among them was former teacher and walkout organizer Sal Castro. He describes the situation that led up to the strike.
The continual lack of concern by the teachers as far as accomplishments by the kids, the closed doors of colleges, the lack of respect for the community, the closed doors. The schools were like missionary communities where the outsiders, the white outsiders came in and they were going to deal with their brown burden and then they were going to go home. But they really had no real concern for the education of the kids.
And the students of the time felt that lack of concern. Among their demands were more ethnic studies courses and bilingual education, better food, and even the basic right to use bathrooms at lunchtime. However, one former organizer, Robert Verdugo, was clear to point out that although the general treatment of Mexican students within LA Unified was poor, the other impetus for action was the overall political climate of 1968. Social worker and former walkout organizer Robert Verdugo.
There was a worldwide revolution going on. You know, there was the war in Vietnam. There was the Tet Offensive. That was the turning point of the Vietnam War. There was a general strike in France that just completely shut down, you know, the country. You know, there was a student mobilization in Mexico City because of the upcoming Olympics. So, you know, there were a lot of things going on, and we were aware of it.
Sal Castro, a teacher at Lincoln High School who helped to organize the walkouts, was arrested on 15 counts of conspiracy to disrupt public schools and 15 counts of conspiracy to disturb the peace. 12 others were also arrested and charged with conspiracy. In 1972, all charges were dropped. The 75-year-old educator and activist continues his work, mainly in a volunteer capacity at the school district, and still works to better an educational system that has improved in 40 years, but is far from perfect. Sal Castro.
As educators, we say we're professional. Now, if I was a doctor and 58% of my patients were dying, I mean, I'd be out the door real fast. Well, teachers who are professionals, 58% of their students are dying. So what do we say? Oh, it's the parents, it's this, it's that. No, damn it. It's the system and it's the teachers.
The massive Chicano walkouts of 1968 have inspired the production of a documentary, an HBO dramatization, and thousands of students across the country to stage similar demonstrations for a better education. For Latino USA, I'm Monica Lopez in Los Angeles.
Imagine for a minute that you're a teenager. You go to the mall, text message your friends, and maybe even play sports at school. Now, imagine that the only difference between you and your classmates is that you're called illegal, a criminal. Reporter Paul Cuadros has spent the last decade talking and working with these teenagers. In fact, he has a name for them. He calls them Generation Illegal. Paul Cuadros joins us now from North Carolina, where he's been focusing on the immigration into that state. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Maria. Good to be here.
I was fascinated when I first heard you use this term, Generation Illegal. Illegal is not a term I like to use when talking about undocumented immigrants, but you're talking about an entire generation of young people that basically feels this way?
Absolutely, yes. These are kids who are growing up here in the U.S., experiencing all the sort of traditional things that other U.S. kids go through, going to the prom, trying out for sports at their high schools, graduating from high school, achieving in school. These kids are going through those same milestones that every U.S. teenager goes through. Yet their access to the society is limited because of their residency status.
So what does it look like, Paul? Again, you work with a lot of these teenagers. You're also a journalist. But what's it like? Give me a regular day for one of these kids who you say is part of this Generation Illegal.
Well, here's a good story. I coach soccer at a local high school here in North Carolina, and one of my players who's a senior this year that I've known for 4 years, I saw her drive up to practice, and that kind of shocked me. But it is a rite of passage for many of these kids to want to get a driver's license, are unable to get a driver's license because of the residency status, but go through this Rubicon of actually having to drive without a license and to risk their lives and their own status here in the United States to be able to get to school.
Paul, we just heard a report on Latino USA about the student walkouts 40 years ago. Do you think that this next generation of Latino youth could be the next generation that politicizes the American youth? We saw hundreds of thousands of people came out and protested for immigrant rights. A lot of those people out there were young people. Talk to me about what you see in terms of these young people being part of a new generation of political activists with or without papers.
Well, during those marches, there was a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of optimism, and a lot of anger at some of the legislation that was being proposed. And it galvanized and it inspired the youth to go out into the streets and to have their voices heard for the first time. Since then, we've seen a real backlash in the country and aimed specifically, at this group. And we've seen these kids sometimes sort of furtively trying desperately to form organizations, to form a movement of some sort, but then cowered by the fact that taking that risk and being more public and organizing themselves might actually get them deported. So a movement, you know, really needs to begin to, I think, incorporate not only those students who are undocumented, but those students who are U.S. citizens and don't have to fear that part of it.
Paul, there will probably be some listeners who say, you know, these kids, whether or not it was their fault that they were brought here by their parents, you know, against their will, perhaps, and, you know, they end up living here without papers. But you know what? They shouldn't be here, and they shouldn't be going to schools, and they shouldn't be trying to get loans. Frankly, if they're here without papers and they're young people, they should go back to whatever country they're from and try and restart their lives.
You know, it's just an unrealistic approach to the issue. These kids have grown up here. They're as American as you or I. They're as American as any kid that they've gone to high school with. And quite frankly, you know, our society could use them. We've spent and we've invested a lot of time, money, and effort to educate these kids within our public school system. Why at the very moment when we can actually begin to push their education a little bit further so that we can get much more in return, why do we want to stop that? It suggests to me that the argument is not as logical as those folks want to paint it. If you've invested so much time and effort to educate somebody, you want the return on your investment. Why would you want to throw that away? That doesn't make any sense.
Paul Cuadros, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you, Maria.
Paul Cuadros is a journalism professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He's also an investigative reporter and author. His most recent book is A Home on the Field, How One Championship Team Inspires Hope for Revival of Small-Town America. And now, permítame que les cuente algo personal. Permit me to tell you something a little bit more personal. I was at a friend's house the other day, and her nanny was helping out in the kitchen. The nanny was born in Mexico and has no documents, but her daughter was born here in New York City. The daughter wants to study ballet folklorico, the traditional dances of Mexico, but she was complaining that the only classes she could find were at night and in the Bronx, which is far from her home in Spanish Harlem. So I said, come on, there have got to be ballet folklorico classes someplace in Spanish Harlem. I mean, it's called Little Mexico these days. Someone has to teach these dances in the barrio. But my friend's nanny said, nope. Ever since this whole immigration thing got hot, they stopped giving classes and stopped the dance troupe. Why? I asked. Because no one wants to get together in a group anymore. People are scared to come together in groups. Because they're afraid that they'll draw attention to themselves and spark a raid, I asked. Just because a group of Mexicans and Mexican Americans are dancing folkloric dances, people are afraid of doing that? Yes, she said. People are afraid to come together as a group. This shocked me and made me sad. Many of the kids who would be taking those classes would likely be U.S. citizens, but they too seem afraid of getting deported or sparking a raid. Why not? It's already happened, and these kids know it. This new fear has changed how this nanny and her kids live. But how does knowing that this kind of fear is out there change me? And how, I must ask, how does it change you as an American to know that this fear is there? So let's continue this dialogue. Send us your thoughts on this issue. We want to hear your voices. Our listener comment line is 800-535-5533. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. In a minute, Sin Fronteras y Sin Barreras, the unifying music of the B-side players coming up on Latino USA. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. To hear the members of the B-side players talk about their sound, it's clear that the only musical constant is variety. The grooves of Latin America and the Caribbean, peppered with funk, rock, jazz, and hip-hop. Para los hijos de Emiliano Zapata, no quieren voz alta, quieren boca callada. Para los que luchan con Nelson Mandela, no quieren libertad, quieren cadenas. Para los que llevan el espíritu de Yanga, no quieren riqueza, quieren pobreza. Los que sueñan con Che Guevara no quieren victoria, quieren derrota, toda la raza. But from many styles of music, the B-side players deliver one message. Unity, as they say, it's a gathering of cultures, it's a gathering of spirits, having fun and uniting people with music. The band was formed in 1994 in San Diego. They've been a staple on the local scene ever since. And that perseverance has now paid off as they were recently included in the iTunes Best of 2007 Editor's Choice Awards. Their latest album is Fire in the Youth, No Borders, No Boundaries. And we're joined now by Carlos Paez, guitarist, lead singer, and principal songwriter for the B-side players. Welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I gotta say, your album rocks.
Oh, I love this record. I love it so much. I'm very proud of it. It's probably the best recording I've ever created in my life. In the city of Los Angeles, there's rebellion in the sky. And the angels are the rebels delivering your signs. Be aware inside by ghetto, always back a conscious mind. 'Cause your puppet strings are cables connecting you online. There's no revolution on your computer. Technology's PC consuming all energy, disconnecting humanity from Mother Nature. No revolution on your cellular phone. There's a war going on while you talk on your phone, and they're still building bombs for mass extermination. Check the song, unplug the song again.
So how did you do it? I mean, because I have to say, one of the things, I love the uniqueness of your music, but at the same time, I love, honestly, the fact that you brought together the sounds of some of my favorite musicians, people like Sargento Garcia and Steel Pulse. I mean, you've got some really wonderful things there. But tell me about the creative process for you, Carlos.
Well, the creative process has always been me being on the road traveling for almost 10 years. I've been touring with some of the most diverse world music, like masters. I traveled 3 months out of the year with the original Wailers, Bob Marley's band, and a lot of old school Latino bands, like from Latin jazz, Poncho Sanchez, to War, a lot of salsa from Cuba, Cubanismo, Los Van Van, just all these bands that I've been opening up for. That was my education, was going on the road, and that was my school. From there, I created my own sound from being inspired by all these legends. I'm creating a mezcla of different cultures, different traditional music. Suenan los tambores de la rebelión. Pa'lante con visa mexica, reggae en español. Como zapatista de liberación. La paz y justicia en nuestra misión. Con energía positiva, buena vibración. A la fiesta de conciencia los invitamos. Sin armas, con palabras, con educación. Tenemos un anuncio para los asesinos. Ya no queremos guerra, destrucción. No queremos fronteras segregando el mundo. El tiempo, mi raza para revolución.
Well, I mean, you can't separate the fact, Carlos, that you created this kind of musical style from the fact that you grew up in Chula Vista, California, which is, you know, I mean, it's like the border crossing of the world between the United States and Mexico right there.
The whole border crossing thing was just, that was part of my life. Living two different worlds, when you go from a third world country to a first world in just, you know, a matter of 5 minutes. So,
is the crossing of the border also what made you so political? And how do you feel about bringing that level of concientización, you know, into your music?
What comes out naturally for me is writing something about consciousness, about awareness, about what's happening today and what the struggle is. That's what comes out of me, and that I decided a long time ago that I was going to devote my art to, like, social awareness and consciousness.
Is it hard for you in terms of selling your music, getting play, getting out there, the fact that you are so political, that you're Latinos and political?
It was hard for me for many years. I'd say this band's been together for 15 years, and for the first 7 years, I mean, we were just struggling out there. It's the whole lyrical thing, you know, pretty much kept the band away from the radio. And the bilingual thing was a really negative thing back then. People were like, why are you singing in English or Spanish? What are you? Are you American? Are you Latino? Are you Mexican? Like, how can you sing in a song both English and Spanish? You know, you got to pick one. and now it's a cool thing. Now it's accepted. Now it's like there's actually a market for people who are bilingual. You know what I mean? Like, it's not taboo no more. It's cool. Like, so
that's
these are different
crazy,
times.
Isn't it?
These are different
Definitely.
Times.
Definitely. There, you know, one of the most powerful songs on the album is the title track. It's called Fire in the Youth. It's got this gentle samba beat. It grows, and then it leads to this chorus of young children. And what was it like for you to bring in these kids, record them to, you know, your music, your vision?
That's one of my favorite songs, definitely, as far as the whole record was inspired by the youth. And during the whole protesting, the anti-war and immigration thing that was going down over here in Southern California. I noticed that the youth was really involved in demonstrating, organizing, and protesting. So talking about 16 years and younger, people were like not going to school and organizing protests and being on the front lines of all the marches. So that was inspirational for me to see that the youth is really involved in what's happening, you know, what's happening down here and in the world. So we dedicated a record to them. It's something that I'm very proud of.
Thanks so much, Carlos. I really appreciate it, and so glad that you stuck it out throughout those years.
Yes, still going.
Carlos Páez is the founder of the San Diego-based B-Side Players. Their new album is Fire in the Youth, available from Concord Picante Records. Latino USA was produced this week by Alex Avila, Benjamin Jacob, Angela Maldonado, and Walter Morgan. Our executive producer is Sean Collins. We had help this week from Kurt Cohen at KPBS in San Diego and Peter Bombar at North Carolina Public Radio. To hear our podcasts, go to latinousa.org or look for us on iTunes. Our listener comment line is 800-535-5533, and our email address is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA. Coming after you.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at lumberliquidators.com. And Walden University, graduate degrees online for professionals who strive to make a difference. Walden University, a higher degree, a higher purpose. WaldenU.edu. This is NPR, National Public Radio.